You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
And I'm Dean Ulsher here for Leonard Lopate today. Dr. Jack Kessler is the chair of the neurology department at Northwestern University. He was leading a team of researchers trying to find a way to treat diabetes with embryonic stem cells. And then on the day that his daughter Allison was paralyzed in a skiing accident, he changed the focus of his research, becoming obsessed, as he puts it, to use his research to repair spinal cord injuries. Stem cell research, as you know, is probably one of the hottest buttons in science, with researchers such as Kessler convinced that their work will bring about a revolution in restorative medicine, while some people consider work such as his to be morally wrong because they believe it requires taking a human life. Dr. Kessler's story is in a new documentary called Mapping Stem Cell Research, Terra Incognita. It premieres on PBS Independent Lens this Friday at 10 p.m. on WNET, Channel 13, and Dr. Jack Kessler is with us here now. Thanks very much for coming.
I'm delighted to be here.
Okay, Cell Biology 101. How does it work, briefly, please, the stem cell?
A stem cell is a cell which is basically an immortal cell, can make identical copies of itself. And, of course, the reason we're so excited about them is that they can literally make every single cell type in every organ of the body. So when we learn how to program the stem cell to become the types of cells in whatever organ we're trying to repair, we can think about repairing the heart after heart attack. We can think about ultimately curing diabetes. And, of course, my own particular quest, we can think about repairing the damaged nervous system.
So how do you do it? How do you make a stem cell become a more specific cell?
You can do it several ways. One way is simply by changing the environment of the cell, putting in proteins that are called growth factors, and they give instructions to the cell to tell it how to grow. Another way is by changing the materials that the cell contacts, because a cell is in contact with a lot of material when it's inside an organ. And then a third way is to actually put genes inside the cell that also direct the cell to tell it to become a very specialized kind of cell.
Mm-hmm. So where do you find these eggs?
Well, it's not quite so simple. We don't go looking for eggs. I think that's the kind of question that unfortunately we get asked that doesn't bear any real relationship to reality. The overwhelming majority of the time, embryonic stem cells are derived from frozen blastocysts, which are present in vitro fertilization clinics around the country. It's estimated that there are almost 500,000 of them. And they will literally either sit in liquid nitrogen until they die, or they will be thrown out in the trash. So the real question you should be asking me, is it more moral to throw them in the trash or to allow scientists to protect to try to use them to cure human disease?
Mm-hmm. Allison, your daughter, had a terrible accident. What happened?
My daughter was an outstanding skier. She was actually skiing on a very little hill in Connecticut just prior going back to school, took a ski jump and landed in an unmarked snowboarding chute and injured her spine. And she's paraplegic in a wheelchair.
How old was she when it happened?
She was 15. She's now graduated from Harvard. She's in London at the London School of Economics. She's leading a very full life. She's a very determined young woman who's not simply not letting her injury prevent her from doing everything she can possibly do with her life.
It changed your life dramatically. You describe how on that day you changed the focus of your research from looking for a way to treat diabetes.
The complications of diabetes, right. Yes. Well, I received a telephone call, the kind of telephone call no parent wants to ever receive. I was in Chicago. I caught the first plane that I could to the East Coast that didn't land until midnight. And while sitting on the plane, unfortunately, I knew what the prognosis was for my daughter. I quizzed the doctor fairly thoroughly, and one always has hope, but I didn't really have much hope because I happened to be a neurologist, so it was right in my area of specialty.
You better than anyone knew what she was facing.
Yes, I did. And so I, while sitting on that airplane, decided that it was now my obligation to try to do everything that I could. I may not ever be able to do anything, but I can certainly try.
It becomes your obsession, as you put it. And we see in this documentary you working with your team of researchers to try to use stem cells to find a cure for your daughter. And there are moments where you push them so hard that I wonder if they're going to be sent to the breaking point.
Well, I must admit, I don't believe I push my students to the breaking point. I also think I push my students a lot less hard than I push myself. My obsession isn't really just to find a cure for my daughter, however. You know, when I was a medical student, I made the decision I wanted to try and regenerate the damaged nervous system. And I've been working on that my whole life.
Why? Why'd you make that decision?
Because I went to medical school planning to be a neurosurgeon. I worked in a neurosurgery lab. I went into the operating room. I saw that surgeons doing everything they possibly could nevertheless left patients with huge disabilities. And I thought, there has to be a better way than this. We just have to be able to somehow think about actually repairing the nervous system. And so I was told, I hope I can say this on the radio, that's a damn fool thing for a neurologist to be doing. But I chose to do it anyway. And, of course, I'm very glad now because there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So I'm really working not just for my daughter. I'm working really to add my little bit to change the whole field. Now I have that extra added incentive. I would obviously love somebody somewhere to find something that would help my daughter.
I'm thinking of that commercial that Christopher Reeve did where through some sort of technique, they managed to make him stand up from his wheelchair, and he made his statement that he believed that in his lifetime that was going to happen, that he would be able to walk again.
Well, I do believe my daughter will be able to walk again. I think that's both a hope and a faith, but it's also something that's grounded, I believe, in my scientific training. It's unfortunately not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen immediately. This is going to take a lot of time. I've already indicated I've worked decades on this problem. Mm-hmm. So when we think about problems like this, we don't think about next month, next year. We think about over several years period of time. But I do believe that this will happen.
Although it seems as if that's been said year after year. We're just a few years away from some major breakthrough.
Well, you'll notice I'm trying not to say we're just a few years away. I think it's very unfortunate, the hype that comes out. People get promised things that sometimes we can't deliver, and that's bad for the people, that's bad for us. I tell my patients, I tell patient advocates all the time that you can't live your life waiting for breakthroughs. You have to go ahead and live your life to the fullest. When and if a breakthrough comes through, that's wonderful, then you take advantage of it. However, I do have to say that the field of molecular and cellular biology is just changing at an astounding rate right now, and it's accelerating the pace of change. So things that were deemed impossible just a few short years ago are possible now.
Well, in fact, just in the last couple of months, I want to say that you're listening to the Leonard Lopate Show, and I'm Dean Ulsher with Dr. Jack Kessler. We found out that maybe it's not necessary to use embryos to derive stem cells, and that, in fact, adult skin cells can be the basis for your work. Does that render the entire controversy moot?
No, it doesn't. First, I have to say that those particular findings were breathtaking. They were just extraordinary, fascinating findings. Yes, it is possible to take a cell from the skin, use a virus to put four genes into that cell and turn it into a cell that's very similar to the embryonic stem cell. But there are a lot of buts here. If you use a virus to put the genes in, you run into the same kinds of problems that people ran into with quote-unquote gene therapy, where children ended up developing leukemia because the virus goes into the DNA, that's the genetic material, in your patient's cell, and it potentially disrupts it. I could go ahead and list several other problems that are going to delay use of these cells. So I think long-term, this is just an astounding breakthrough. Short-term, we still have to continue working with the embryonic stem cell.
But I have to say, based on my layman's understanding of how things work, don't embryonic stem cells also run the risk of becoming cancer cells? That's my biggest fear, that we have a lot of hope wrapped up in this technology and this research, and in fact it's going to turn out maybe to cause cancer.
So the embryonic stem cell, if it's not differentiated into a mature kind of cell, will form a tumor called a teratoma. So we can't simply transplant embryonic stem cells into a human being. Yes, I worry about that also because I think we're not quite ready to do embryonic stem cell trials, and there's one that may start fairly soon, and my own personal belief is that's a little premature. Having said that, we work with them in the laboratory all the time. If we're careful about differentiating the cells, we literally never get tumors. Never.
Hmm. The reason for the controversy is that there are those who believe that by working with embryonic stem cells, that requires the taking of a human life. And there are people in this documentary who represent that point of view, particularly a Catholic priest who articulates that position. You use the word crusade to describe the opponents of the work that you're doing.
Yes, I think crusade is exactly the right word. The world would still be flat. The Earth would still be the center of the universe if we simply allowed dogma to determine what's scientifically valid and not valid. I respect my opponent's views. I don't believe that everybody has to feel the way I do. But I think for them to try to tell me that my views, which I have to tell you as a scientist and a physician, are very well-grounded views, that my views are wrong, that they have a message from whoever their God happens to be that I'm wrong, I think that's actually intolerable. I think that I can let them live. They should let me live. I have to say that when we develop therapies, those people believe that way. Let's see them not use those therapies on their loved ones. Somehow I think they'll find a way to want to cure their mother, father, sister, brother, whoever it is who has a fatal illness that they now know we can cure because of this research.
There's a moment in the film where you seem to be responding to their own approach by trying to define when conception happens, and you're there with your students working on your team, and you're distinguishing between fertilization and conception. Not everybody agrees with you. How do you do it?
That's true. Not everybody would agree with it. You can go to the dictionary and you can get whatever definition you want. Fertilization is when a sperm unites with the egg and you get a cell, which is now actually, it's what we call totipotent stem cell, can make a whole organism. That's fertilization. That has absolutely no possibility of being a human being if it's sitting in a tissue culture dish. It just simply can't. It can only be a human being when it's in a uterus.
But that's the part that, from their point of view, matters.
And from their point of view, what the traditional Catholic view was the same as the Judeo-Christian concept, that the embryo had no moral status until 40 days after conception. So, in fact, the traditional Catholic view would have had no problem with it. It's only in the modern Catholic Church decided we don't know when life begins, so we will just arbitrarily say it is at the moment of fertilization. Again, as I said, I have no problem with them believing that. I happen to work with blastocysts. I happen to work with little bundles of cells in a tissue culture dish. That is not a human being. I work with human beings as well. I'm trying to cure real human beings. And to say that a little ball of cells in a tissue culture dish is more important than a living, speaking, breathing, walking person who has feelings, who's in pain, as a physician, I find that intolerable. My goal as a physician is to alleviate pain.
Dr. Jack Kessler is my guest, and he is here for a little while longer here on the Leonard Lopez Show. We're going to be taking a little break and back with him in just a moment. It's the Leonard Lopez Show, and I'm Dean Ulsher sitting in. My guest is Dr. Jack Kessler, and he is featured in a new documentary which uses the theme of terra incognita. To pick up on what you're talking about before, there was a time when our view of the world was very different from what it is today, and it was only because certain people insisted, no, the Earth is not in the center of the universe, that we now have our new understanding of science as it is. Stem cell research, controversial, and I have to say that every once in a while, another news story appears that makes me think, why hasn't the controversy been swept away? First of all, in 2001, when President Bush vetoed the effort to have stem cell research, he said, well, we have these 60 lines of stem cells available for research. What that means is there already exists a body of stem cells that can duplicate ad infinitum for research. Why can't we just work from what we have? Why is there a need for new stem cells?
Well, first of all, the president announced that there were 60-something lines, and I turned to my wife and I said, where in the expletive deleted did he come up with that number? Because I think almost any stem cell biologist could have told you that that many lines did not exist in the world. In fact, the National Institutes of Health lists somewhere in the range of 20 possible lines. That's problem number one.
Why is that a problem? Well, even if there's 20, why is that a problem?
Because number one, all of these cells were derived in the presence of animal cells. We've learned how to do it now differently, but in those days, the only way they could be grown was to grow them in the presence of mouse cells. That means they're contaminated with mouse proteins and potentially with animal viruses, and they really shouldn't be used in human beings. Number two, the longer you keep cells like this in tissue culture or keep them frozen, the more chances they're going to get genetic abnormalities. So with time, as they divide again and again and again, they don't have the normal body's mechanisms for getting rid of the bad cells. They will become abnormal and no longer usable. Number three, they have a very limited genetic background. So if, for example, I want to treat an Eskimo, I might not want to use cells from a South Sea Islander. I would want to use genetically matched cells. I could actually give you a whole long list of other reasons.
That's enough.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is that any scientist will tell you that it was just a very, very poor scientific decision.
Mm-hmm. Then we hear from the Harvard Stem Cell Institute that there is a way to use unfertilized eggs to generate stem cells. If so, why do we need embryonic stem cells?
Well, first of all, that's very controversial. Using human unfertilized eggs, you have to acquire them. And probably many people have objections to simply harvesting them. Number two,
I mean, the ethics of, for example, paying for them?
The ethics of paying a young woman to donate her eggs, which many people in the field, including the National Academy of Sciences, and say shouldn't happen because the amounts of money that were being paid were actually fairly large. Number two, it's not yet been shown that those cells have all the potential of the embryonic stem cell. So unless and until that happens, we really yet don't really have an alternative.
So what is the problem with getting these over-fertilized eggs from in vitro fertilization clinics?
Well, there actually is no problem getting them. In fact, they're available. There are many, many people who are truly grateful that rather than throwing them away, something useful and good will happen. Mm-hmm. And rather than simply letting them sit there and die because they have no more desire to have any more children, that we can use them for something positive. Mm. So there's actually no shortage of material. There's no difficulty getting them. The problem is that we cannot use federal funding in any way, shape, manner, or form to study those cells. So that limits what we can do. And if we happen to have federal funding in our laboratory, we have to become a little bit schizophrenic, divide our laboratory down the middle, and use non-approved cells on one side and approved cells on the other.
That's a little crazy. However, if the stem cell future is as bright as we think it is, it seems to me that the private sector would have jumped in long ago and flooded you with money because of the promise of riches.
So the private sector, if you by that you mean big pharma, right now this is too small for big pharma. It's too designer. We're thinking about treatments that will treat individual people. Big pharma wants treatments that are going to treat 20 or 30 million people at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So the research.
This is the future of individualized medicine. That's basically everything is tailored to the unique genome of a person.
Exactly. And further, it's in the development stage. So with new kinds of things like this, typically what happens is a smaller company, startup companies, develop the technology, then big pharma comes along and buys them. But we don't want all of our research to be done by pharmaceutical companies. They don't necessarily have the best interests of the public at heart all the time. I have no problem. I think big pharma does a remarkably positive thing, but there are things that a private researcher is going to do that big pharma will never do, and to cut federal funding away from one of the most exciting areas of biology is a terrible thing to do.
Dr. Jack Kessler is our guest here on the Leonard Lopate Show. The work you've done involves gel, and it's, as I understand it, a way of sort of creating a scaffold for a spinal cord to regenerate itself. Is that right?
That's correct. So when we think about regenerating organs, most everybody these days thinks about stem cells, and they forget that organs aren't just made of cells. They're also made of all that material in between the cells. It happens it's called extracellular matrix, but for the purpose of this show, let's just call it stuff. And if you want to think about repairing an organ, you have to think about regenerating that stuff as well as the cells. And this is a nano-engineered material that gives us an ability to regenerate the kind of material that's in between the stem cells so that the stem cells will become the kinds of cells that we want them to. You asked me at the very beginning of the cell show, how do we make the cell become the kind of cell we want it to become? And I mentioned to you by having it contact the right kinds of materials. And this is one way for it to contact the right kind of material inside the living organism.
You mentioned how organs regenerate. We've just heard about the opera great Marilyn Horne. She was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. She's alive 2 years later as the result of an experimental treatment, which is remarkable. Pancreatic cancer also killed Pavarotti just not too long ago. And so we feel as if any moment now, people might start living from things that were just last week a death sentence.
Well, I think that's what medicine is all about. I think it's taking things that cause misery, pain, and ultimately death, and stopping the pain, stopping the misery, and allowing people to lead full lives. It's probably not going to change our overall lifespan. There's a theoretical kind of limit of about 120 years. But it will allow more and more people, as they get to be older, to enjoy their life, to be healthy, to not be incapacitated. And then, of course, worst of all, people who are in their teens or their 20s who develop a serious disease, to actually let them live their life instead of being in pain, being miserable, and dying young.
One of the ironies of this movie, it depicts not only you and your daughter, but also a colleague of yours whose daughter suffered an injury even worse than your daughter Allison's. And she is more or less incapacitated except for some use of her right hand.
That's correct. Carrie had a much higher lesion involving her neck. She's what's called quadriplegic. However, Carrie's doing remarkably well. She's off living in an apartment by herself now. She does have some help, of course, to get ready in the morning. She has a job that she's holding down, and she's going ahead and living her life to the best that she can possibly live it. And again, it's what I always tell my patients. Do everything you can to live your life. Don't wait for scientists and physicians to make breakthroughs. When they come, then you can think about it.
Actually, I have to say, it seems more as if that's your daughter's message than it is yours. And Allison comes across as the voice of reason. She articulates that point in the movie. And it makes me wonder, also observing Carrie's enormous strength, is there some mechanism that kicks in when you've been the victim of some sort of trauma like this, a survival mechanism that gives you the sunny outlook that your parents do not share? The daughters here seem stronger than the fathers.
Well, I wish every patient felt that way, and they don't. Many patients become depressed and never get over that. They can't ever see past what happened to them. I think that this is a reflection of these two individual personalities, two very, very strong young women, remarkable young women. It's not often that a parent really learns a lot from their child, but I have really learned a lot from my daughter, watching her face something that would have overwhelmed many people and simply just not letting it get in the way of leading a very, very full life. So I'm just prouder of my daughter than I can possibly tell you about her philosophy in life. It doesn't stop me from still feeling the pain of seeing her in the wheelchair. It doesn't stop me from wanting to do everything I can to contribute to one day, perhaps, seeing her walk again.
Getting back to your own research, you created this scaffold using gel so that you could regenerate spinal cords in mice, essentially. Have I said that right?
Well, I begin to regenerate them. I wouldn't want anybody listening to this show to think that, wow, now we've suddenly found a way to completely regenerate the spinal cord. We haven't. I often tell people when I'm speaking to them that this is, you know, not the beginning of the end, but perhaps it's the end of the beginning. We see now techniques that are going to enable us to do these things. There's still a lot of research to go. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can help animals that were unable to walk begin to walk. A number of people have done other things that can help with functional recovery, but it's just the beginning.
Now, again, I want to understand exactly what happened here. We saw mice in this film. The film, by the way, is subtitled Terra Incognita. The full title, Mapping Stem Cell Research, Terra Incognita. It's going to be on PBS this Friday night on Channel 13 at 10 o'clock as part of Independent Lens. And Dr. Jack Kessler, who is the chair of the Department of Neurology at Northwestern and who runs the Stem Cell Institute there, had this major breakthrough that we watch. Am I right in saying that the breakthrough doesn't even yet involve stem cells? It's simply the use of a gel that allows the body to do its own regenerating?
Well, actually, the science is fairly complicated. But okay. what we found is that the gel limits stem cells from creating a kind of cell that forms a scar in the spinal cord that prevents fibers from growing. So one of the things we're doing is we're actually regulating the stem cells, or a different kind of cell called a progenitor cell. That's a nuance that we don't have to go into. But the ones already in the body, and directing them to do the kinds of things that we want them to do. And in fact, the ultimate goal of stem cell biology won't be necessarily to transplant stem cells in. It'll be to learn how to take the stem cells that are already present in our bodies and direct them to do the things that we want. In the short term, we'll be transplanting cells in. In the long term, we'll be much, much smarter. Then we'll take the cells already present, because every organ in our body, including the brain, has stem cells even in the adult.
Yes. To get a little bit into the science, so what happens is we watch as your assistant tries to dye these. Well, it's not clear to me exactly what's happening, but basically you're trying to see whether, in fact, axons in the spinal cord have grown beyond the point of the injury.
Right. So if we think of a spinal cord injury, it's like cutting a telephone cable. And what we're trying to do is get that cable to regrow. Well, if you actually get the ends of the cable to regrow, how do you know that they've gone across the area that was damaged? And the way you do it is you go up into the brain where the beginning of the cell is, and you put a material in so the cell can pick it up and it'll carry it down the wire, down the spinal cord.
Yes.
And you look to see it and see if it gets carried down the spinal cord past the area of the lesion. Then you know that you've gotten fibers to regenerate past the site of the lesion. And that's what you see in the movie. You see a very, very complicated procedure. It took my student, actually the final data took her 5 months just to get the data for it, but it actually took her a year and a half to get everything technically to work so that we could be able to do these experiments that are called track tracing experiments.
Mm-hmm. Still, though, the results of your experiment did not get published by the journal Science or Nature.
Which That's correct. Actually, both.
Oh, by both.
Okay, and
why?
It's just going to get because people in this field are justifiably very skeptical. We have some fairly dramatic findings, and scientists always want more. And so what you find when you send a paper in, the scientist says, well, how about A, B, and C? And then you give them A, B, and C, and they say, how about D, E, and F? It's part of the scientific review process. It can be very frustrating. In the long run, it's a good process.
Isn't it very unconventional for you to be public with your research before it's been published?
Not really. It's unconventional for those people who are worried that they're going to get scooped, those people who are worried that people who are quote-unquote competing with them are going to go back into the laboratory and go do it and try and publish it. If you don't really care about that, and all you really care about is the science itself and trying to advance it, then you don't really care about publicizing ahead of time.
Although, aren't you putting your flag in the ground and saying, we were here? This is a way of saying, you can't scoop us because this is what we've done so far?
Well, making the movie had nothing to do with this particular research. Why did we make the movie? We made the movie, number one, to put a human face on stem cell biology so people can begin to understand what we go through, because I think sometimes stem cell biologists aren't necessarily painted, you know, as they are. Number two, for people to understand the scientific process. It's not eureka. You don't suddenly one day wake up and there's a new discovery. It's a very painstaking process, two steps forward, one step back. And the film shows that. Number three, to show what it's like to have a spinal cord injury, to show what it's like to think about working to solve these problems so people understand the motivations. This is what stem cell biology is about. It's not some, you know, ethical question, how many angels are on the head of a pin. It's a very practical thing. Help human beings who are suffering. And I believe the film conveys all that. It had nothing to do with trying to convey our own individual research. We didn't actually know we were going to make this particular breakthrough when they started filming. Mm. I mean, you see in the film when I actually get the data, yeah. And I'm very excited by the data. I hoped that we would get that data, but I had absolutely no right to expect that it would happen. As I said, science is an iffy kind of thing. If the experiment works, that's wonderful. So we did it for reasons other than popularizing our particular results.
So the journal said, sorry, we need more from you. What is that next step? Where does your research take you
next? We're doing more. We hope to have it published now in the next couple months. It's in a final review in another journal, which I think we'll publish it, and I will let you know when they give me my final acceptance. But it's looking very positive, and we're very excited by that.
But still, I want to know the next stage of your research. Now that you've shown that this gel can actually help in the self-healing of a spinal cord, what next?
Well, again, as I tried to emphasize a little earlier in the show, by no means is this a quote-unquote cure. This is just the beginning. We're using it now in conjunction with stem cells that are being transplanted in particular stem cells in which we've done something called genetic engineering, in which we modify them so that they'll help change the environment in the spinal cord to help it regenerate. We're using it in conjunction with a number of drugs that have been shown to help in spinal cord regeneration. Almost everybody in this field, myself included, believes there's not one magic bullet, that it's going to require several things together to ultimately repair the spinal cord. So now we're beginning to try several of these things together to see if we can improve our results.
I'm going to ask you to do something that you're probably reluctant to do, but I'm going to ask you anyway because it's my job. Take us 5 years down the road and tell me what you think is possible and likely, and then 10 years down the road and say 20.
Well, I'll start with the easy one. 20 years down the road, I believe I'll see my daughter walking again. I think there's just every reason to believe that biology, nanotechnology, and for that matter, robotics, something that we haven't talked about, right, but all three of those will have progressed to the point where my daughter will be walking.
Are you talking about the bionic woman?
Well, yes, assist devices that will be able to read electrical impulses from the nervous system and transmit them and allow you to be able to walk. There are many people who are doing a lot of promising kinds of research in that area. And which one will work first, I can't tell you. I actually think that we'll see this 10 years from now. I think 5 years from now is unlikely. And it's unlikely if for no other reason. If I actually had the answer right now, it would take me 5 years to prove it. That's how long it takes to do clinical trials, and we don't have the answer right now. So the right time frame for this is, I believe, probably a 5 to 10 year time frame. But so there I answered you a little more specifically than you probably expected me to.
No, that's good. I'm glad to have it.
But I don't have a crystal ball. I could be wrong either way.
Dr. Jack Kessler is the chair of the Department of Neurology at Northwestern University, and he runs the Stem Cell Institute there. He is featured in a documentary called Mapping Stem Cell Research, Terra Incognita, and it's going to air in New York and the surrounding area this coming Friday at 10 o'clock p.m. on Channel 13. Dr. Jack Kessler, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.